I'm Mindy Todd. Welcome to The Point. Today, books set on or about Cape Cod and the islands. Jill Erickson, reference librarian at Falmouth Public Library, and Vicki Titcomb from Titcomb's Bookshop in Sandwich join us. Good morning, ladies.
Good morning, Mindy.
So this is a tough one because there's a lot of books to choose from our unique little corner of the world.
It is amazing how many books have been written about Cape Cod and the islands, and it is very difficult to find sort of that perfect mix between classic things that we've loved forever and new things that are coming out. Like every week there's something new and interesting, so it is a really challenging show to do a Cape. And we also know that everyone listening has their own personal favorite book and, about Cape Cod and the islands,
and I'm hoping maybe there's some that have something on the South Coast. So if you have a favorite book that's Cape Cod, islands, or South Coast coastal community, 866-999-4626 is our number. Our email address is thepoint@capeandislands.org. Let's start with fiction. Who wants to go first, Jill?
I would be happy to go first here. This is one of my favorite novels in the whole world, and there will be obvious reasons why this is one of my favorite novels. It is called The Giant's House by Elizabeth McCracken. It was her first novel, and one of the reasons, not only is it set on Cape Cod, but it also stars a reference librarian, and she writes so beautifully about what it is to be a reference librarian at this particular point in time when she was writing this novel. And the premise of this, as it tells us on the back of the book, is the year is 1950, and in a small town on Cape Cod, 26-year-old librarian Peggy Court feels like love and life have stood her up until the day James Carlson Sweat, the overtall 11-year-old boy who's the talk of the town, walks into her library and changes her life forever. Mm. And it turns out he is, in fact, a giant, and that is why he's such a tall boy. But one of the things that I truly love, so it's much about as much about falling in love and libraries as it is about Cape Cod, I have to say. But it is set in Cape Cod. And here's something from the book about when he first comes to her library. She writes, "I do not love mankind, but he was different. He was a redhead as a child. You won't hear that from most people. Most people won't care. But he had pretty strawberry blonde hair. If he'd been out in the sun more, it would have been streak gold. He first came into my library in the fall of 1950 when he was 11. Some teacher from the elementary school brought them all trooping in. I was behind the desk putting a card of fiction in order. I thought at first he was a second teacher. He was so much taller than the rest, tall even for a grown man. Then I noticed the chinos and white bucks and saw that this was the overtall boy I'd heard about." And she goes on to fall in love with this overtall boy, but she also talks a little bit about the Cape. And the town she's living in is called Brewsterville. She says, "I lived then as now in Brewsterville, an unremarkable little town on Cape Cod. Brewsterville lies halfway up the spit curl of the Cape, not close enough to the rest of the world to be convenient, not far enough to be attractively remote. We get tourists who don't know exactly what they've come out to see. Now we have little to show them. A few places that sell homemade jelly, a few guest houses, a small stretch of beach on the bayside. Our zoning laws keep us quaint, but just." So, and I have to say, I think in every one of these novels about Cape Cod, there's something about the tourists. Tourists play a big part in all of these novels that I've brought today. But one of the things I most love about this particular book, as I was saying, is her interest in what it was to be a reference librarian and what it is like to share knowledge with other people. She writes, "Even at age 11, 12, James asked me how to find things in the catalog. He told me of books he liked, wanting something similar. He recognized me as an expert. Despite popular theories, I believe people fall in love based not on good looks or fate, but on knowledge. Either they are amazed by something a beloved knows that they themselves do not know, or they discover common, rare knowledge, or they can supply knowledge to someone who's lacking. Hasn't anyone found a strange ignorance in someone beguiling? An earnest question? What day of the week does Thanksgiving fall on this year? Nowadays, trendy librarians, wanting to be important, say knowledge is power. I know better. Knowledge is love. So it's just a really beautiful read. It's a sad story. It does not end particularly happily, which you sort of know from the beginning that things are not going to do well. But it really captures what reference work was prior to the advent of the internet, which is one of the things I love about this novel, because I remember that time. And it's beautifully written, and Elizabeth McCracken is a great writer. It's The Giant's House.
Was she asking what day of the week Thanksgiving is falling on? Isn't it always a
Thursday?
Yes. All right. Moving on. Vicki, what have you got?
Well, first one I brought is The Orphans of Race Point by Patry Francis. And it is just a glorious read set in Provincetown. I love the fact that you just become part of the community. It's really set in the Portuguese community. It's a love story between a young boy and girl. They meet at age 9 after a rather horrific murder. And Gus, the boy, loses one of his parents. But it's just, it's lovely. You can taste the food. You can sit on the porch with the people. You feel that wonderful community that's part of Providence, mm-hmm. Provincetown.
I love that when you can taste, when you're reading, like, all of a sudden you have a craving for whatever it is.
Oh, yes.
They've got you when you're
that's so much part of the culture.
Exactly.
And it comes out in the book.
Right. 866-999-4626 is our toll-free number if you'd like to add a book to our list. And don't worry about writing them down. We'll have a link later on today to all the books we talk about this morning. 866-999-4626. And I think our email is working this morning. Do we know? It's the point at Cape Ann. No, it's not. Okay, so you got a call in this morning. Our email is down this morning. Jill, what's next?
Well, I've brought some other first novels, which are very first novels. They have just come out recently. And I will mention in passing before I start talking about these, which is that these three authors actually will all be at the Falmouth Public Library on Saturday, September 19th from 10 to noon. And they include Sarah Ann Johnson, Ellen Herrick, and Jennifer Seng. And each one of their novels are set on either the Cape or Islands. I like them all. I mean, I think they're all really interesting stories. But Ellen Herrick's novel has not actually been published yet. It will be out at the beginning of September. And it's called The Sparrow Sisters. And I just love this story. I think that part of it is that it reminds me of other stories that I've read. It takes place on the Cape. There are three sisters who are all named after plants. And it, as the publisher says, it has echoes of Practical Magic, and If You'd Like That, or The Witches of Eastwick. And it all connects back to the beginning of time on Cape Cod, which is, say, the 1600s. And there was a case where there's a witch that was being tried, and the sisters have learned how to use plants to heal anything. And they have this beautiful garden. And one of the great things about this novel is you get so many smells in this book because every flower, every herb they're using is so beautifully described. And I think that that's one of the great things about it. The sisters are Sorrel, Nettie, and Patience. And as she writes, they might well have gone on as they were accustomed, planting and reaping, selling the abundance of their labors, cooking for each other, and listening to the opera every Saturday afternoon, as Sorrel did the ironing, fulfilling the roles of town eccentrics. Although, to be fair, Sorrel was not yet 40, hardly Biddy material. But then the old town doctor, Elikum Higgins, retired and set in motion everything that came after. He delivered all but one of the girls and cared for each of them on the rare occasion that they fell ill. And what, of course, happens is a new doctor comes to town. It is very much a romance, but it is also this just really beautiful telling of what it's like to be in a garden, what it's like to grow plants, and how you can use those plants for good or ill. There's a very unhappy subplot in this because one of them is accused of killing a child.
Uh-oh.
And so things get a little dark in the middle of the book. And yet it is such a joy to read. And I think she's such a good storyteller, Ellen Herrick, that you just are carried along with these characters in such a beautiful way. And that is such a gift when you and you don't want to stop reading. You're going to just keep reading. And I predict this will be a movie.
Say, is this the one you saw?
This is the
movie?
One. Yeah. Absolutely. I'm already casting it in my head. And I think that's one. And the three sisters are very different from one another. And the end, of course, there's clearly going to be a sequel. So you have to all go out and read this so that, you know, there can be a sequel. Because the last line, and Sorrel, that is a story for another time. Dot, dot, dot. So she's left herself wide open for a sequel. And I think it's a delightful read and a great summertime read because it is not a really difficult novel. It is just a fun read with a child getting killed in the middle. But it all works out. It all works out.
And you've got a couple more, but first we'll go to Vicki with her next book.
Oh, sure. I just finished this. It's a book by John G. Ives called The Keeper. And it's fabulous. It's a story of the life-saving service around the turn of the century, based on a lot of facts. It follows two young men who decide to join the life-saving service. One of them had just come back from the Spanish-American War, and his mother had been lost in a shipwreck off Cape Cod, and he's come to Provincetown to try to learn more about that. He joins the life-saving service, and we follow him as he goes through the training, and it's brutal training. They have to go out in all weather, in the wintertime, into the ocean, taking these boats that they row out. Sometimes they have to flip them over on purpose because they will flip over not on purpose when they're saving someone, and they have to learn how to right the boat, get back in, and go on and save lives.
It's suspenseful, too.
Well, it is. Yeah. And I was looking, the life-saving service I read saved over 100,000 people. There were thousands of shipwrecks in that area from about Chatham to Provincetown on the Outer Cape. So this all comes alive, and there are even illustrations that are taken from the time.
Sounds good.
Great read.
Jill?
I have brought a book which I actually was on my summer reading list, and I indeed read, which doesn't always happen, so that was good. And this is the one that was by Jennifer Tseng, Mayumi and the Sea of Happiness. Jennifer works in a library in West Tisbury and has written this great novel. And having now read it, it is a beautifully written novel. I think I would not be surprised, shall I say, if Jennifer had not read The Giant's House, because I think there's a lot that is similar between these novels. Both being that they are the reference librarian, as it were, is falling in love with inappropriate choices. not that I know anything about this, but it's really a beautifully written book. And I have to say, I can't wait till she comes to the library because I have some really particular questions about what happens in the plot at the end, which I will not give away. But I was surprised by one of the major plot points at the end, and I can't wait to talk to her about
find out
what the thinking was. Was it the editor or was it the author that made that decision?
Oh, and you brought one of my favorite authors, Sally Gunning. I love everything Sally writes.
No, we couldn't possibly talk about Cape Cod books without talking about Sally Gunning.
That's right.
I brought her first one, Widow's War, first in her historical fiction,
that is.
Great. Because didn't she write mysteries?
She did. Lots of mysteries prior to her historicals. She did. Some wonderful ones. But Widow's War is just a delightful historical novel, so well written, so grounded in history, and so personal. You come to love the characters. It's about a woman who is a widow of someone who goes out whaling. And it's set around 1761, somewhere before the Revolution. And women have very few rights.
No kidding, huh?
Don't you think?
Right?
and unfortunately for her, her daughter had married a man who is her now closest male relative who gets all of her rights after the death of her husband. She doesn't like him. He's not very nice. She struggles to keep her rights to live in her house.
She's a strong woman.
She is.
It's a great read. Yeah.
And we love her. And we love Sally and all of her books. So highly recommend.
Yeah, that's a good one. Jill?
Well, and speaking of strong women, the other first novel I brought along with me by Sarah Ann Johnson is The Lightkeeper's Wife, a novel. And it is starts entangled. This is one of the reviews, says entangled in 19th century social restrictions. Two women experience the transformative power of grief and the resurrecting power of love. Johnson's debut intertwines the tales of Hannah Snow, the titular lighthouse keeper's widow, and Annie, a sea captain's runaway wife. And the way it's described on the book, it says Hannah Snow couldn't be in the water saving shipwrecked sailors. Her husband would be furious. It's his job to tend to the lighthouse at Dangerfield to warn the ships off the rocks. Sailors know that the Dangerfield coastline is treacherous, but the waves constantly pull them down into the deep anyway. But when the ship Cynthia Rose runs aground, John is away buying supplies, or, you know, else the rest of the story would not have happened, and Hannah rushes out into the storm. She can only fish one sailor out of the icy water, weather-worn, half-drunk Billy. When Hannah gets word that John will not return home to her, she sinks into grief so deep that she feels she may never surface again. With Billy's help, she continues to man the lighthouse, keeping the lamps blazing even during her darkest hours. And it sounds like a really interesting read. I actually have not had a chance to read this one yet, but I'm looking forward to it. And she will be coming in September as well. And there was a really good interview with her that I found online, and she talks about this novel. And one of the things she was asked, what spurred the idea for the Lightkeeper's Wife? And she responds, at our local historical museum, I saw a print of Grace Darling, a lightkeeper's daughter who was rowing into treacherous seas to rescue shipwrecked sailors. There she was in her dress and petticoats, doing what was considered a man's job. I was intrigued with Grace Darling because as a child growing up on Cape Cod, I had sailed with the boys. I wanted to be acknowledged for being a real sailor, but we had no female heroes. There were ship captains and pirates, but no women for me to look up to. The image of Grace Darling resonated with me. I had sailed in stormy waters. I knew how to handle a boat, and she inspired Hannah Snow.
I love authors are inspired. I love those
Isn't
stories.
Isn't that amazing?
Look at a photo and
like, wow, I've a got book. A novel. Yes, exactly.
Vicki, Alice Hoffman, another good one.
Yes. Oh, sometimes it's so hard to choose. Many good books. But Alice Hoffman is such a wonderful writer, and she was inspired, I believe, by the house she lived in on the Cape. This is Blackbird House. I remember she came to talk at our store when this came out, and she spoke in my parents' house, which is built in the 1690s. So we're sitting in a house on Cape Cod that's very old. This is really about a dozen interconnected stories all set in one house on Cape Cod, about a 200-year-old house, starting with the family that built the house. He was a whaler and died soon after with his son. And there was a blackbird. I guess the son had it as a pet, as I recall. And the blackbird comes back white after the disaster and the death of the father and son. And the descendants of the blackbird stay around the house observing all the life that goes on. But I think all of us, there's so many of these wonderful old houses, and you just have to wonder.
They all have a story.
What happened here? What kind of lives did these people live? And I think that's what truly inspired Alice to write this book as she follows through time in the house.
We are talking about books set on or about Cape Cod and the islands, and we'd love to hear your picks, as well as if you know of a book maybe set on the South Coast. 866-999-4626. That's 866-999-4626. We'll have more after a break. You're listening to The Point. We are talking about books set on or about Cape Cod and the islands with Jill Erickson, reference librarian at Falmouth Public Library, and Vicki Titcomb from Titcomb's Bookshop in Sandwich. 866-999-4626 is our toll-free number if you'd like to add something to our list. 866-999-4626. Before we finish up on fiction, another one of my favorites. You brought Geraldine books. I love Geraldine.
Me too.
Everything she writes.
And we're just saying, I got a chance to read her new book coming out in October, Secret Chord, which is wonderful.
I haven't gotten to read that yet.
But this is Caleb's Crossing. I thought we'd go over to Martha's Vineyard for a little while. And we're back to it. This is an amazing story. There was a Wampanoag Indian boy who went to Harvard in 1665. And this is his story, but what makes it so unique and wonderful is that we're seeing him through the eyes of a little girl who he grows up with. She's the daughter of a minister. It's the 1600s. Life isn't easy for girls, was it?
No.
or Native Americans. But we see culture. We see the differences in opportunities for men and women. Here, this this Wampanoag Indian boy can go to Harvard, but the girl, of course, could not. Mm-hmm. So.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting, too, because that there's, you know, it's based on a true story, but we don't know a lot. So she kind of creates the story for us. It's a wonderful book.
She does, but she does it so well. Yeah. She researches well and lovely. And just to run through a couple of quick ones, I really like this book. It's called Death at Woods Hole. Thought that we should bring this for today. It's an Emily Cabot mystery by Frances McNamara. And we go back to the 1890s in Woods Hole, and the main character is working with the Marine Biological Laboratory, and what do you know? There's a murder. First thing she finds is there's a man dead in a fish tank.
Uh-oh.
But then we learn about what this was like, this town was like 100 years ago.
Yeah.
So a great, great read. Also, I loved The House on Oyster Creek by Heidi John Schmidt. Again, I love to learn something from books, and this one is set in the oystering community of Wellfleet. And you learn so much about how that all runs, but it's also an amazing love story about a somewhat difficult marriage. And the husband is 20 years older than his wife. They have a 4-year-old girl. They've moved from New York to his family's home in Wellfleet. And so highly recommended for just a good read.
All right. Let's up to Carol, who's giving us a call from Falmouth. Hi, Carol.
Good morning. Wonderful show, as always. Of course, I say that as a proud sustainer of WC.
Oh, well, thank you.
Oh, Carol.
This is kind of moving on past the fiction.
Okay.
When I became a bookseller in 1986 in Falmouth, there were so few children's books about the Cape. But over time, there became more and more, and now there's so much. But of all of them, I think three that are real favorites that are now probably only available in the library, one is Riptide by Frances Ward Weller, about a dog that just won't stay off the beach. Golden Retriever, so what's not to love?
Oh, and it's so beautifully illustrated.
There's another one called I Wonder If I'll See a Whale, about a child going on a whale watch, and it is so beautifully done. It's like a poem, the whole thing.
Hmm.
And then an old favorite that people keep asking for year in and year out, whether or not it's available, is Adventures of Captain Goody by Paul Giambarba, who lives in Mashpee and is one of the great hidden assets of the Cape.
Oh, those are awesome.
Not a children's book, but it's one of the funniest things you'll ever read, and it's called The Inevitable Guest. It's by Marcia Montbleu. I believe she's in Centerville, and it is a series of essays about having house guests, what it requires to be a good house guest. On the Cape.
You know, Carol, I was going to bring that, and I was reading it yesterday again. It's hilarious, isn't it?
It is absolutely a screamer. If you ever get a chance to meet Marcia, she's just as funny in person, in a very dry sort of way, but she doesn't go out and flash it around. She just will surprise you with a little something that will just crack you up.
Yeah, great.
A great thing to leave in the guest room, right? Yeah. Maybe.
Absolutely.
Very funny. Carol, thanks for those suggestions.
I've even sent it to people in England because it's so good.
Thanks again for calling in, Carol. I appreciate that. You know, talking about funny books, I don't know if I have the title right. Kingsbury talking about Craig Kingsbury. Do you remember that on The Vineyard? He was the guy that that crusty character in Jaws was based on. Absolutely hilarious. I mean, I was crying laughing as I was reading this, but this was several years old now, and his daughter wrote it, and it's one of those I went, can't tell that story on the air. She did a wonderful job of cleaning it up when we actually did that program, but it is absolutely hysterical. All right, Karen is calling from West Falmouth. Hi, Karen.
Hi, good morning. Thank you for the great show.
Sure.
I wondered if either of your experts have read Linda Cardillo's first book in the series. I think it's only going to be a 2-book series, I'm not sure, called The Boathouse Cafe.
I have not.
You have to tell us about it.
Really, I just finished it 2 nights ago, and then I actually conversed with her on Facebook to find out when the sequel's coming out, because I can't wait to read it.
That's when you know it's a really good book.
Getting it done, so that's great. It takes place on Chappaquiddick Island, and has quite a bit of Wampanoag information in it. One of the lead characters is a Wampanoag man, and takes place in the early 40s, just as the war is starting. The second book will jump ahead to 2005, so I'm not, you know, I don't know what's going to happen in between those years, but I found it fascinating. There was a lot of really good information about the native population on the island and some of the struggles they went through about identity even back then, about maintaining their identity. And it's a good romance novel, but also quite a lot of history and some good information about the sea and what Chappaquiddick was like at that time. There was no bridge, of course. Mm-hmm. And it's really quite good.
So great.
I'm looking forward to the second book, and this one just came out. I got it at the West Falmouth Library, and it was put in the circulation in May. So,
okay, so it's okay, great. All right, Karen, thanks. We'll add that to the list. And for those trying to keep track, don't worry, we'll have a link to the list on our website, capeandislands.org, a little later on today. Carol is next. Carol calling from Orleans. Hi, Carol.
Hi. I'm delighted to be part of the show. It's always so great. I'm wondering if anyone has caught up with Barbara Struna from Brewster and her two books published so far. One's called The Old Cape House, and the other is The Old Teapot. And they are both taken from the point of view of a modern woman who finds something on her property that takes her back to the past. And the past in the first book is the Maria Hallett and Captain Jack Bellamy love story.
Oh.
And she does a great job of switching from past to present. And it is there's a couple of great, great stories, great stuff.
Yeah. And what was the author's name?
Barbara Struna, Struna, and she is a Cape resident, lives in Brewster, and these books are in a number of the bookstores, and the first one, the Old Cape House, has been out now about a year, but the Old Teapot's pretty new.
I was going to say, that's tough to do. Sometimes when they jump from past to present back in, it gets so confusing, so I'm glad to hear you say that she does a good job of
Oh, it's seamless. It really is. It's very, very, very... Really well done. Really well done.
You know, I haven't read it yet, but I will say they're selling very well at our bookshop, and we've heard very good things about books.
Oh, they are. Yes. You do have it there.
Oh, absolutely.
Great.
Carol, thanks. Thanks.
So that's my suggestion.
Wonderful. Thanks for calling in with that. We appreciate that. If you have a suggestion for our list, books set on or about Cape Cod and the islands of the South Coast, 866-999-4626. That's 866-999-4626. Unfortunately, our email is down today, so no email. Where are we going next, Jill?
Well, I think we're going to go with the big overview next, which is, and this book that I brought with me is one of my favorite books, and I don't think I've ever actually spoke. We've done other shows on the Cape and Islands, but I don't think I brought this one before. It's called Along Shore by John R. Stilgo, and I have to confess that I actually knew John Stilgo well before he was a professor in visual and environmental studies at Harvard, when I was a small, like, junior counselor at what was used to be called the South Shore Nature Center and is now called the South Shore Natural Science Center in Norwell on the South Shore. And apparently they changed their name because they found out there was some nudist colony called South Shore Nature Center and decided perhaps that was not the best name for a summer camp.
Only a reference librarian would know all this.
Yeah, In any case, the book itself is really beautiful. I do wish that they would republish it and use color for all the beautiful illustrations he has in here and postcards and posters of the Cape. As the New York Times said in their review, and this came out some time ago, this has been out, it came out in 1994. They write, in the introduction to Along Shore, his profusely illustrated, exhaustively researched, and wide-ranging book, the landscape historian John R. Stilgo defines his ostensible subject as, quote, a reach or stretch of Massachusetts coastline and its environs seaward and landward from Gurnet Light to Minot Ledge. end quote. For those not conversant with the geography of the Massachusetts coast, this covers an area of approximately 25 miles along the shore from just south of Boston to just north of Plymouth, bordering on Cape Cod Bay. In fact, if Cape Cod were an arm crooked at the elbow, then the finger of land at the very tip would be pointing straight back at it as if to say, hey, take a look at this. And that is exactly what Mr. Stilgoe's book does and more. And one of the beautiful things about this book, and again, this is my prejudice, absolutely, because he talks about so many writers in here and their descriptions of the coast and the shoreline. His chapter headings sort of tell you it all. It's glim, hazards, guzzle, salt marshes, skiffs, harbors, wharves, smudge, treasure, quaintness, bikinis, risk, the coastal realm. And those are the chapter. Give you an idea. He has a good sense of humor. But he also talks about how this piece of land that is right, you know, between the water and the mainland is what it's called. And he calls it the margin. And you also learn all kinds of things in this book. He says, this book focuses on a zone between what seamen call open ocean and what landsmen might call ordinary inland landscape. As a simile, the margins at the left and right of these words work well, but not perfectly. In printing, a margin is that odd space between the edge of the text and the edge of the page, a space that may shrink or expand slightly without troubling the reader, a space the author may fill with gloss, a space the reader may embellish with hand-scrawled notes. Margin, in fact, derives from marge, an old term for coast or shore, strong and vital in Spencer's time, but obsolescent by the 19th century. So, also a book in which you will learn lots of interesting little bits. He has a great section in here on Joseph Lincoln and what Joseph Lincoln did for the Cape in terms of solidifying its image as this place to go. And he writes, Joseph C. Lincoln engineered what can only be called the quaintifying of the New England seacoast. Literary scholars still ignore him, and even local historians know little of his career and certainly few of his original inclinations. Not even a proper bibliography of his short stories and novels exists, at least not at the time of the writing of this book. I bet by now there is one. Nor does a sales analysis of the novels he produced year after year, usually just before Christmas. And he talks about the novels as such great things. It says, nowadays, Lincoln novels sell immediately at high prices in longshore secondhand bookstores and coastal public libraries bind and rebind their tattered copies. And I can attest to that because we have the shabbiest looking Joseph Lincoln books, but we will never get rid of them because they are so much about the Cape. And he also has in his section on bikinis, a lot of it is about women and their rights, as it were, to swim or not swim. Mm-hmm. And how the history of the bathing suit on Cape, you know, on the Cape, and what that meant, and who would wear suits, who would not wear suits. It's really fascinating. And he brings along this great section from Kate Chopin's The Awakening, which is about when she first goes into the water, Edna Pontellier, who is our heroine in The Awakening, vacationing at a Gulf Coast resort and enjoying staring at the sea, glim, breathing salt air and relaxing among the local Creoles. And it talks about, this is a quote from that book, about what happens when she's looking at the water. And she says, most of them walk, her neighbors that is, most of them walked into the water as though into a native element. But for weeks, as she struggles to learn to swim while wearing her heavy woolen suit, Edna makes no progress despite her lessons. Quote, a certain ungovernable dread hung about her when in the water, unless there was a hand nearby that might reach out and reassure her. And finally, she gets into the water. She learns to swim, and she writes, she could have shouted for joy. She did shout for joy, as with a sweeping stroke or two, she lifted her body to the surface of the water. A feeling of exultation overtook her, as if some power of significant importance had been given her to control the working of her body and her soul. She grew daring and reckless, overestimating her strength. She wanted to swim far out, where no woman had swum before. So you get all these great little bits of literature within this book, and it it's all about what happens right on the edge of the story. There's also a lot in here about Taurus. He is not a big fan of Taurus, okay. I have to all say. Right. But it's a beautifully illustrated and beautifully written book called A Long Shore.
All right. Terry is calling from Kootuat. Hi, Terry.
Hi, Mindy. Hi.
Hi.
I just had to tell you about a book that I read a number of years ago that is by an author in Westport, mm-hmm. Massachusetts, the South Coast.
Yep.
And her name is Dawn Clifton Tripp, and the book is called Moontide. And
I love that book. That's a beautiful book.
Moontide. Read that?
Yes, yeah. It's really yeah. good.
Tell us about it, Terry.
Yeah, well, just to read from the back of the book, because it's sort of more concise, it says, lush and fiercely beautiful, Moontide follows the lives of three women in a small fishing village on the Massachusetts coast from 1913 to the great New England hurricane of 1938. And another author wrote that she called it a haunting meditation, reminiscent of Louise Erdős on family, place, love, mourning, and memory. Mm. And she says that Dawn Clifton Tripp has written a book so lovely and brutal, it feels like a dream.
Oh,
it's just wonderful, wonderful writing. I just enjoyed it so much. And to have one of the characters actually, that hurricane of 1938, that devastated.
Right. She writes beautiful sentences, Dawn Tripp does. Yeah, just lovely writing.
Terry, thanks for that. We appreciate that suggestion.
You're welcome. And there is another book that she wrote. I've forgotten the name of it. It sort of has some of the same characters in it. So it's nice to know that there's always another book that you can read by this beautiful author.
Great. Terry, thanks for the call. Let's go to Robin, calling from somewhere on the South Coast. Hi, Robin.
I have two recommendations.
Sure.
And the first is a series of books that are from the 30s and 40s, and I hope you didn't mention it already. They're by Phoebe Atwood Taylor.
Oh, those! I almost brought one of those.
Phoebe Atwood Taylor, okay.
And some of it, if you read now, is politically incorrect, and you have to get over that, I guess. But it's about A.C. Mayo, who's called a hayseed sleuth, and is sort of laconic and a typical Cape Cod Yankee, and how he solves mysteries. And there are all kinds of curious characters. And I started reading them when I was in the Midwest and much younger. And it sort of gave me an idea about the flavor of the Cape.
Hmm.
So
okay.
If anyone's interested in reading it for that reason alone, they're quirky and funny and interesting.
Okay.
I'd recommend them.
Okay, and you had a second one?
And the second one is called My Panic, A Cape Cod Chronicle by Tom Kane. And this was, it's not brand new, but he lived in Truro, and it sort of talked about his experiences and what it was like to live there and what he did and the characters and people in the town that he met. And it's beautifully written.
Great.
So that would be my other recommendation.
Wonderful. Robin, thanks for both of those recommendations. 866-999-4626 is our number if you'd like to add to our list. We'll talk more after break. You're listening to The Point. We are talking about books set on or about the Cape, the coast, and the islands. 866-999-4626 is our toll-free number if you'd like to add to our list. Our email is down today, so you have to call in. 866-999-4626. With us, Jill Erickson, reference librarian at Falmouth Public Library, and Vicki Titcomb from Titcomb's Bookshop in Sandwich. Vicki, what have you got there?
Well, an earlier caller just mentioned the hurricane of 1938, and I brought a book that I love called A Wind to Shake the World, The Story of the 1938 Hurricane by Everett S. Allen. It's remarkable. This young man lived on Martha's Vineyard, and we learn about his life during the Depression. But he got a job at the New Bedford Standard Times the day before the hurricane.
Oh, my.
Yeah. Later, he went back and interviewed 200 survivors of this tremendous hurricane. I guess it was the worst one since one in the 1600s that hit the South Coast. It hit Cape Cod. It talks about Falmouth and Woods Hole and the canal. But mostly, it's that area of Rhode Island and Buzzards Bay. But it's just It's just wonderfully written. We're seeing first-person narratives of what it was like to survive a horrible storm, being swept out to sea in houses. There was a house that was floating down the Cape Cod Canal. All four people in it were dead. Mm. So just astounding history that people would enjoy, I think.
And another one of my favorite authors you have there.
Oh, how could we talk about Cape Cod writing without talking about Nat Philbrick his wonderful histories? I brought two. One is In the Heart of the Sea, The Tragedy of the Whale Ship Essex, and also Mayflower. And I thought I'd talk a little bit more about this. Mayflower covers all that wonderful history from between Plymouth and the American Revolution. We often skip, Pilgrim's Land, and then we have a revolution.
Right.
Well, there was a lot of time in between.
Yeah, King Philip's War.
And yes, which was amazing and violent and awful on both sides. He writes his nonfiction as the greatest. He's just such a great storyteller. Yeah. Everything he writes.
You know what else is really interesting about his writing is you think you know the history of particulars.
Yeah.
But he always finds these little tidbits or bits of information or people that we haven't really heard much about before.
Right.
Yeah. So it's not only a good refresher course in your history, but you'll learn things you didn't know.
Oh yes, and so much of the Mayflower is set on the Cape, and In the Heart of the Sea is going to be a motion picture soon. So if you haven't read it, it's time to read that before the movie comes out.
Exactly. All right, Jill, what have you got?
Well, I had to bring along at least one poet. There are many poets who live on Cape Cod, and this is, of course, one of the most famous, which is Mary Oliver. However, I have not brought a collection of her poems. I brought a book called Our World. And it is the most beautiful book. It's photographs by Molly Malone Cook and text by Mary Oliver. They were partners for a very long time. I first learned about this book, interestingly enough, from a website, which I love, called Brain Pickings. If you don't know Brain Pickings, go find it right after we get off the radio. She wrote this article about this book, and the title was Mary Oliver and What Attention Really Means and Her Moving Elegy for Her Soulmate. And we all know, I think, Mary Oliver's poems. They're beautiful takes on nature, and this is a beautiful tribute to her partner, who was a photographer. And there are lots of photos in here. There are 49 of Cook's photos in here. And it's great because she had a bookstore. So there are shots in here, for example, of Robert Motherwell in the bookstore, of Norman Mailer looking pretty grumpy reading a book in her bookstore. But as Maria Popover says in her Brain Pickings article, she says, "Our world is a sublime read in its entirety, the kind that enters the soul like a deep breath and remains there as an eternal exhale," which is a great way of describing this. And it's really also very funny because it talks so much about what their life had been like together in Provincetown in the very early years and what life was like in Provincetown then. She writes, "In some consideration of my writings, a reviewer once surmised that I must have a private income of some substance, since all I ever seemed to do in my poems was wander around Provincetown's woods and its dunes and its long beaches. It was a silly surmise. Looking at the world was one of the important parts of my life, and so that is what I did. It was as simple as that. Poets, if they ever make a living from their writings, do not do so when they are first beginning to publish, and this was years ago. We did not, as I have said before, have much income. We had love and work and play instead. But the province lands around our town held many secrets in their glistening beauty, and as we were young and bold and persistent in the ways of our chosen lives, we were also fairly fearless. Over the years, I brought home many things: shells, feathers, once a hurt duck, twice a hurt gull, flowers always. The urgency of supper simply added a new set of adventures to my ramblings. Along the shores and in the woods, I began to recognize what was actually food. Actually, everywhere I learned. The earth is full of interest, artistry, and generosity. Simple foods these were that I found, but foods need no more than flavoring to become festive. The borders of woods were thick with wild bay, as good as the kind that you can buy. As I gathered their shining leaves, I could listen to the cardinal singing nearby, or watch the blue heron on its way from one pond to another lift and dip its enormous wings. A pleasant place to shop, this land, mm-hmm. and in almost any season.
Oh, beautiful.
So she is a beautiful writer. It's in her prose as well as her poetry, and yeah. such a beautiful tribute to her partner.
Yeah. And you also brought a Mary Oliver book.
Oh, I had to. We couldn't talk about Cape Cod without talking about Mary Oliver. Her words are so simple, and then she takes your breath away mm-hmm. with the power of them. I did bring a little poem from Truro Bear, and it is Truro Bear that I'd love to read. There's a bear in the Truro woods. People have seen it, 3 or 4 or 2 or 1. I think of the thickness of the serious woods around the dark bowls of the Truro ponds. I think of the blueberry fields, the blackberry tangles, and the cranberry bogs. And the sky with its new moon, its familiar star trails, burns down like a brand new heaver. While everywhere I look at the scratchy hillsides, shadows seem to grow shoulders. Surely a beast might be clever, be lucky, move quietly through the woods for years, learning to stay away from roads and houses. Common sense mutters, it can't be true. It must be somebody's runaway dog. But the seed has been planted. And when has happiness ever required much evidence to begin its leaf-green breathing?
Mm, very nice.
Everything she writes is set on the Cape. She's now in Florida, and I brought a copy of, it's an advanced copy of her newest book, which is coming out, I believe, in October, called Felicity. And I've read a number of the poems, and she's just brilliant yeah. and wonderful.
Great. Let's try to squeeze Bonnie in, calling from Sandwich. Hi, Bonnie.
Hi, how are you?
Good.
Yep. I would love to recommend, it's a cookbook mm-hmm. called Cranberry Cooking for All Seasons by Nancy Capilone.
Cranberry Cooking for
and
All
I
Seasons.
And I might have gotten it at Titcomb's.
Well, thank you, Bonnie. Yes. I think it's out of print
but
now.
It has everything, the history of the cranberry harvest and pictures and wonderful recipes. For example, albacore tuna with dill and dried cranberries. A cranberry Waldorf salad, and everything from apple cranberry crisp, the basic how to make cranberry sauce. It's just a lovely book. It really is.
Right. Bonnie, thanks for sharing that. And I guess if it's out, we'll have to check the library and see if we can find it.
That might be another. I think it is still in print. Oh, I'll have to double check.
Yeah. All right, Bonnie, thanks for calling with that suggestion. Vicki, what have we got?
Well, should we do a few cookbooks,
sure.
do you think?
Yeah.
Is that a good time?
We've got about 3 minutes, though.
Oh, boy. We're going to go fast. I just have to mention, all right, we'll just mention a three. One is Cape Cod Chef's Table by John Carafoli.
That's
fabulous.
A great book. Yeah.
Fabulous recipes. And some are very simple.
And they're from restaurants. And what I love about it is, you know, normally you go and you say, can I have this recipe? And they say, no.
Yeah. We've all been to Four Seas, right? Well, you can learn how to make their ice cream.
Yeah.
Many different things. Morning Glory. Story Farm, wonderful on Martha's Vineyard, their farm food, stories from the fields, recipes from the kitchen. Again, down to earth, Cape, wonderful, beautifully illustrated. Mm-hmm. And Sarah Lee Chase has a new cookbook, New England Open House Cookbook, 300 recipes inspired by the bounty of New England. But she's from the Cape, and a lot of them are really focused on Cape Cod.
Right. Yeah, she was here talking about that book. That was a good one, too. You've got a couple of cookbooks.
And I would also mention the Beetlebung Farm Cookbook by Chris Fisher with Catherine Young, which has a beautiful, it's about a year of cooking on Martha's Vineyard. And so many of these cookbooks now tell the story of the family that has started the farm and how the grandparents started it and how things went on from there. They're great stories as well as great recipes, so that every little bit of it starts with, you know, my grandparents moved to Chilmark in the 1950s and goes on from there mm-hmm. and tells great family stories as well as having some beautiful, beautiful photographs in it. There's a great peach tart recipe, great stories about scallops and his grandparents again. I think in this cookbook, I love the stories as much as I love the recipes.
You could probably squeeze in one more.
And I would also mention Susan Branches,
yes.
From the Heart of the Home. Her autumn book is particularly lovely for the beginning of the autumn season, which is coming perilously close.
Yep.
And
right
she has just reprinted this so that there's a nice new copy of it available.
And she has a new cookbook new book coming out this fall.
That's right, which looks really interesting as well. And she talks about antiquing on the Cape and her Halloween on the vineyard. There are a lot of vineyard stories in here. And she also claims that steamers can be ordered anytime from the vineyard. You just have to call.
All right. So much about lifestyle.
Jill Erickson, reference librarian at Falmouth Public Library, and Vicki Titcomb from Titcomb's Bookshop and Sandwich. Thank you both.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mindy.
I'm Mindy Todd. Thanks for listening.
The Point is produced by Amy Vince, with assistance from Jenny Junker. The executive producer is Mindy Todd. Theme music by Benjamin Verdery and William Coulter. The Point is a production of WCAI, the local NPR station for the Cape, the Coast, and the Islands.